I'm going to zip through fast some quick fundamentals on motivation that really will change your paradigm about what motivation is, what it isn't, okay? We're going to get into that first, because we kind of need to know those things first before we can get into more specifics. But then we're going to come back to some of these things that we were just talking about of unmotivated teens and what to do about it, okay? So let's get into the fundamentals. Okay, first thing, there's three types of motivation. First type is the most obvious, it's biological, right? When you're hungry, you want to eat, right? When you're thirsty, you want to drink, right? Like biological motivation. We are programmed to stay alive, so it's a real motivator, right? Have you ever been famished, right? Oh, you gotta go find, you can't think about anything else, right? That's a motivator, okay? So there's normal biological motivators. See this a lot in teams. Okay, next one is external. Okay, external rewards and punishments. Okay, so this is motivation coming from the outside in. Okay, you get a reward if you do this, or you get punished if you do that. Okay, and that tends to be a significant part of a lot of family parenting. Okay, it's normal, and that's not a bad thing. Okay, but there are drawbacks to it, and we'll get into that here in a little bit. Okay, and then let me zip through this really fast. So this is Harry Harlow. So originally, before the 1940s, scientists believed these were the two types of motivations. There were biological motivators and there were external motivators. Okay. Then Harlow came along, this guy. He was doing some research on rhesus monkeys. And he was trying to figure out how smart they are. And they devised these little puzzles for the monkeys to use. And they thought they would motivate the monkey to figure out the puzzle through a reward. They would give them a raisin every time that they completed a puzzle, was the idea, right? They would give them this raisin, and then that would be the motivation for the monkey to figure out the puzzle. But as they started putting all of these, they had about 30 monkeys, as they started putting these little puzzles in the cages, before they could even get down the line and put all the puzzles into the cages, the monkeys already started figuring them out. And they were like, wait a second, we didn't even motivate them. They have no, this is not part of like any sort of biological, instinctual thing for them to do to figure out a puzzle. Why would they do this? So he started going, there must be an additional type of motivation, and that's intrinsic motivation, okay? But no one paid attention because he was studying monkeys. And we know we're not monkeys, so no one paid attention until about the 1970s. So these two guys came along, Edward Deci and Richard Ryan, and they wrote this fantastic, although thick and a little boring, book called Intrinsic Motivation and Self-Determination in Human Behavior. Okay? And this is sort of the Bible on intrinsic motivation. It's kind of the first book that was really written that studied human motivation, specifically intrinsic motivation. And it's intrinsic motivation that I think all of us are wanting our kids to have, right? Would you say that? In other words, their own self-motivation and desire to get things done and do things, right? So that you're not there propelling them, okay? One of the things that these two gentlemen discovered through a whole, I won't get into it because we've got a little time and I want to get to so many things today. But one of the things that these two guys discovered is basically this. That external motivations work really. And within a period of time, depending on how big the external motivator, how big the punishment, or how big the reward is, not only after a period of time does the motivation go back to normal, go back to wherever it was, it actually decreases. One of their most famous studies that they did with the Wharton School of Business in Pennsylvania is they studied the sales teams of 100 of the top 500 corporations in America. And they studied their sales incentives that they would introduce at different points in the year, right? And what they discovered is on average, for the first 3 months of the new sales incentive, it would boost motivation. But by 6 months, it would go back to normal. Even with the reward still existing, it would go back to normal, it would go back to where they were before, and by 9 months, it would actually decrease. Incentives decreased motivation long term,
even though they increased motivation short term. I can see some light bulbs going off. When we use a lot of external motivation in our households, we actually decrease motivation over time. Now, I'm not saying that there's not a place for it, okay? I'm not saying that there's not a place for it, but it should be used sparingly. What you want to do is cultivate intrinsic motivation. Get to engaging with them on their wants and desires, and get them into a habit of fulfilling those wants and desires. So that's what we're going to talk about more. Okay, so let's get into the underlying neuroscience and neurochemicals that are going on in our bodies and our brains that create this feeling and this desire within us, okay? So we're kind of getting outside of the psychological. We're going to go into the neuroscience of it all for a second, okay? So the most important chemical in our body when it comes to action is called dopamine. Okay? Many of you probably have heard of it. Dopamine is the basis of all action. Okay? So for a second here, I want you all to bear with me. I want you to think about, don't do this, but think about standing up. You feel that? That desire kind of comes. Just think about standing up. Okay? Now stand up. Okay. It took dopamine firing throughout your body, literally, for you to be able to do that. And here's what's interesting. Go ahead and sit down. Dopamine is the basis of not just all action, but it's the basis of all habit, okay, and addiction. Here's why. When we haven't done something before, okay, so, you know, think about something that you've done new recently. You might have felt some trepidation, some worry, am I going to be able to do this, and so forth, right? And especially if you have zero experience with even anything like it, you actually get very little dopamine at the anticipation of doing that thing, because you've never done it before. In other words, there's no neural pathways full of dopamine receptors built throughout your brain, okay? So because there's none of those pathways, you don't really feel a desire to do that thing, right? But imagine yourself standing up, and you start to feel like a little desire to stand up, right? Because you've done it 1,000,000,000 times before, right? So the reverse happens when we've done something many times. We actually get a big burst of dopamine in our body at the moment we anticipate doing that thing, okay? The moment we anticipate even doing it, we get all this dopamine. And then we get very little when we actually complete that thing. But with something brand new, we get very little up front, but then we get a lot when we actually complete that thing. Okay? Does that make sense? So our bodies are actually designed to do the things that we've done before. That's why we get into habits and get into ruts and get into cycles of just doing the same thing over and over. It's the dopamine in our bodies that cause that. Have you ever heard of pattern interruption? Right? One of the things that we do at Williamsburg Learning, my company, is we do summer camps, and we specifically talk to our parents about, hey, put your kid on the summer camp, put them out for a week. It's a pattern interrupter, and help them reset new patterns when they come back. That's your opportunity. They're going to go have a blast with us, learn some new things, gain some confidence, gain some friends, do something really cool. But it's afterward where your opportunity is. You can start to introduce new habits with them. And I'll talk more about how to do that in a little bit. Okay, so dopamine is a big one. And sometimes you need a big pattern interrupter to get you out of that dopamine rut of this is what I do day in and day out. Okay, second one is serotonin. Serotonin is the confidence chemical, right? All the animals in the entire animal kingdom, including us, when you're brimming with confidence, your body, your blood is brimming with serotonin. You produce tons and tons of serotonin. And what's interesting about serotonin as opposed to dopamine is it requires interaction with other people to get it. It's a social chemical. So if you're just on your own, you can't get serotonin. You have to interact with other people to be able to get serotonin. Isn't that fascinating? It requires, even though our body produces it, it requires other people, okay? So how do we get serotonin? Well, we get it anytime that we've done something that others praise us for, we get serotonin. We get this boost of confidence, right? Does that make sense? Right? I love your hair. It's great, right? Like, she's got great hair, right? I love it. A little bit of serotonin probably came up in that, okay? You know what's interesting, though, serotonin, is when I complimented her, I get a little hit of serotonin as well.
So you get it both ways.
You're watching, like, I don't know, a friend graduate or a child graduate, and you feel all this, you're brimming with pride, right? That's the serotonin pumping through your body. You're feeling that, and you're not the one graduating. Right? But you're feeling it because they accomplished something, right? When you see your child walk for the first time, you feel so good, right? You feel so excited. That's the serotonin. It's a social chemical. There's another social chemical called oxytocin. This is the love chemical, okay? This, often called the love chemical, is also the trust chemical, okay? It helps us to build trust with other people. We largely get it not through compliments and care. That's so, like, if you have a spouse or a friend that gives you a compliment, that's going to be the serotonin. You get oxytocin through touch, through intimacy, right? And through even being vulnerable and feeling accepted. Does that make sense? Isn't that interesting? And again, this is also a social chemical. You cannot get it without interacting with other people. Isn't that fascinating? So those two chemicals, and these are the only two chemicals that we get because we can only get if we interact with other people, okay? So oxytocin. So when we make a deal with someone, we shake hands so often, right? There's something about that touch, right? And if someone was like, well, I won't shake your hand on it, you'd kind of be like, can I trust this person? You know what I mean? There's something about that touch and that personal space that allows you to trust someone. But it can also create false trust. And I'm not going to go off onto this tangent too much, but think about teenagers that might want to be kissed in and making out a little bit. We start to build all this love and trust in this person that may not be actually deserved, right? Because they're 16 years old, right? But you feel a lot of trust because you've accepted this person into your personal space. That feels good. It feels nice. You want that. Does that make sense? So our bodies are built to gain that love, and you can kind of hack it through touch. So be careful with that, right? That's just one of the things that I tell my son all the time. You might feel a lot of these feelings, but it's because you're touching, not because they actually deserve that trust. Does that make sense? It's important to recognize it. All right, let's keep going. Next big motivator is stress. And you might be like, wait, shouldn't we avoid stress? Gosh, every time I talk to any doctor, they're like, avoid stress. No, we actually don't want to avoid stress. We want to avoid too much stress, and I'll get into that. So stress creates the fight or flight response in us, okay? We either are going to fight, we're going to get up and go and fight right now, or flight, we're going to run away, okay? Both require immense amount of energy. If you're going to actually fight someone, right, especially fight for your life, there's a lot of energy in that, right? Or run away because you're trying to save your own life, right? That takes a ton of energy. Okay? Our bodies are again built to survive, so if they're built to survive, we need a ton of energy. So when cortisol kicks in, when that stress kicks in, it creates that fight or flight feeling. Oh, by which bar? To garner that much energy, unlike these other chemicals, it needs to draw energy from other areas of our body. So when you have a lot of stress, it literally shuts down, not completely, not 100%, it's a sliding scale, right? But it shuts down other systems like cell regeneration and growth hormones, okay? So have you ever seen someone be very stressed for a lengthy period of time and they almost age right in front of your eyes? You ever seen that before, right? That's because cell regeneration and growth hormones have shut down in their body and they are literally aging, okay? That's why too much stress is a problem. But here's the thing, is life stressful? Yeah, and gaining a tolerance for a certain amount of stress is an important and good thing. I won't go too deep into it, we can get into it other times, but stress is something you want your kids to experience. And too often we as parents, I think a lot of us as homeschoolers realize this, right? We guard our children from stress. No, we want to guard them from extreme amounts. Short bursts, great. Long term, every day, psychological stress, no, that's not good, right? For an hour or two, right? You're going to do an oral exam. You're going to do a hard test. You're going to do, you know, a long run or any number of things. That's a good thing for them to have. And that intolerance to stress, right, is what often creates from some of the parents that we're talking about, their kids that aren't very motivated, is they're not used to it. So you have to actually plan ways to push them beyond their normal limits of stress a little bit, not for long periods, not weeks and months, but for an hour or two, right? Push them beyond their normal limits, and they'll grow in their ability to both tolerate stress and actually get some good motivation from it. Okay? All right, let's keep going. Last one. This is our kind of buddy. On its own, it's not a motivator, but it's a helper for all the others. Okay? This is endorphins. When we're experiencing all the others, especially stress, we can also get endorphins. Okay? And endorphins are the body's natural painkiller. So they're like a little hit of drugs, frankly. Okay? It's your body's natural high. You ever heard of the runner's high? Right? That's endorphins. That's all that is. So our bodies are actually literally designed to help us cope with strong amounts of stress. Not for weeks and months, but bursts for a few hours? Yeah. And once you get into that, usually at about a half hour to an hour mark, your body will start to pump in some endorphins. Okay? And you'll actually feel a little bit like lighter and better, and feel not as much pain, and you're feeling pretty good, okay? So endorphins is another one that really, really helps. Yeah, please.
Are endorphins only physiological, or are they emotional too? Because I was hearing that they feel good for a little bit.
Yeah.
Is it just physiological?
Here's what the science says, is no, but it's mostly physiological, okay? So, sorry, the question was, is it all physical? Is it just when you're doing, like, physical hard things? Not necessarily, but it's like it will, right? If there's a physical component to it, or your body is, like, for example, I don't know, you have an oral exam, you know, for a PhD, for example, right? You're going to probably, especially about a half hour to an hour into that, you're going to feel some endorphins coming up in your body, and you really will, right? So is that physically enduring? Not so much, but there is a physical component because there's this physical response. So the physical response is what triggers it, but it doesn't have to be you're running. It can be you're doing a test, right? It can be mental, in other words. Cool. Okay, so that's endorphins. All right, so that gives us kind of a baseline of where motivation comes from, what it is, and what we're seeking. We're seeking intrinsic motivation. Okay, want to keep running. Oh, here we go. Those were there, those slides are. Yeah, real quick, back to stress. This is what you're going for. Optimal performance is a moderate to high amount of stress for a low period of time. The ideal zone is that you're not in boredom, but you're in comfort to stretch. You don't want to push to strain for too far or too long, because then you can start to reach burnout, you can age right before your eye, right? All that stuff. Okay, cool. Let's keep going. Okay, so... Here we go. All right. So how do we grow this intrinsic motivation? Now that we understand where it comes from, you can actually trigger it, okay? You can be intentional. Let me say it this way. Motivation isn't something that happens to you. It's a choice, okay? Or more specifically, it's a series of choices, okay? Motivation isn't just something that, boom, hits you one day. Right? Ideas that you start putting energy towards, dopamine towards, and so forth, will hit you. But motivation is a choice. Long-term, sustained, intrinsic motivation is a choice. And the way you get there is through these three steps. Purpose, autonomy, and mastery. Okay? And it goes in that order. Purpose, autonomy, mastery. Okay? Purpose, autonomy, and mastery. Okay, so let me share with you a quick story from my own life when I was a youth who lacked motivation, okay, lacked a lot of motivation. And I'll tell you a little bit about my experience, and then we're going to go back to this and talk about how I discovered purpose, autonomy, and mastery and what changed me, okay? So when I was 12 years old, my parents, we've been homeschooling, they put me into this private school, but it was a different private school. Okay, it was a very unique private school. I remember it as run by conservative hippies. you know, crunchy conservatives, you know, they always fall track. Like, it was, and they were very into this concept of inspire, not require. Who's ever heard that phrase? Okay? They were very into this concept of inspire, not require. And I was 12 years old, sitting in the classroom on the first day, and they said, we only want you to learn if you want to learn. Okay? Let me pause there. They skipped this one.
Purpose and went straight to autonomy. Okay? That was kind of the problem. But, hey, they're at least somewhat there, right? There's some good to it, too. Okay? If a kid has a lot of purpose, it's going to work. If a kid doesn't have a lot of purpose, it's not going to work, right? So I was the kid without purpose. I had to be there in my mind.
And that's all I did, is I had to show up, right? And for a whole year, and I'm not joking when I say this, I'm somewhat embarrassed about it, but life worked out okay. But for a whole year, I didn't really learn anything. I rarely showed up to class, and I mean, it was just such a weird experience. They had it was in this older building that wasn't originally built to be a school, and they had these really large bathrooms. And they literally, I don't know why, but they had a couple couches in the bathrooms. And I, you know, my adult self says, gross, but my 12-year-old self was like, hey, good place to take a nap, you know what I mean? I'd go into the bathroom and take a nap, okay? Or there was this company across the street that had a basketball hoop for their workers outside, and a lot of their workers on breaks would go out and play basketball, and anytime they were going out and playing basketball, I'd run over and play with them. And I literally did that for an entire year. Didn't learn anything, didn't progress in my education, nothing, okay? Well, that summer, after that school year was over, I was hanging out with my best friend, Ryan. Ryan's 12 years older than I was, and I kind of prided myself that I kept up with him educationally, even though he went to public school and I was homeschooled, that I was basically on his level, okay? And he and I were kind of nerds, still are. And we really like sports. And so one day we were hanging out and he's like, oh, I learned how they create QB rating, which is where they take a quarterback and they take 9 different stats and they basically create one number, and the higher number out of these 9 different stats is the better the quarterback. It's a QB or quarterback rating, right? And it takes some basic pre-algebra to run the equations to do it, okay? So he was showing this to me, and that's the year I should have been learning pre-algebra. And he's showing this to me, and it was like Greek to me, right? It was, I could not follow. And slowly but surely, as he's trying to explain this stuff, and I'm kind of nodding and trying to get it, not understanding, I slowly but surely realize, I have no clue what he's talking about. And then the next epiphany is, oh no, I just wasted a whole year, and now I'm dumb. So I'm 13 at this point, and I literally just thought, like, oh no, I'm dumb. I'm behind Ryan now. Uh-oh, right? So I made up some excuse, like, my mom needs me, and I leave. I'm walking home, and the weight of the world is on my 13-year-old shoulders, just going, what did I do? I just wasted a whole year doing nothing, sleeping in a bathroom. What am I doing? And I get home, teenagers do, okay? I blame mom. Mom, why'd you send me to this school? Blah, blah, blah. What? Blah, you know, and I pushed it all onto my mom. At the time, she just seemed to react with, well, let's go talk to one of the counselors at the school and let's see what we can do, right? That's how I remember it. She remembers it as, yeah, buddy, you did waste a whole year. This is what you get, you know what I mean? But what I remember is just, let's go talk to one of the counselors. So we go down to the school, we talk to one of the counselors. This guy, his name's Larry Hill, he's this big Marine, okay? Older guy, but big Marine. He would look, and he also taught at the school, and he would literally, like, he would curl while teaching. I'm not joking, like, he was always trying to, like, pump us up, you know what I mean? And it was funny. Anyway, so this big Marine, he's in his office, he's talking to me, and it's like, mur, 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 and I can't even, like, hear him, you know? And he can tell that I'm not engaging with him. I'm just, like, off in my head, like, I can't believe I wasted a whole year. I'm dumb now. My life is over. I'm stupid for the rest of my life. That's how I felt in that moment, okay? And finally, he goes, Adam, what are you worried about? And I go, I don't know. I just wasted a whole year. Like, at at best, am I going to have to graduate a year late now? Or like, you know, what's going to happen, right? And he goes, Adam, if you want to, if you want it, you could graduate a year early. And I was a punk 13-year-old kid, and I went,
well, maybe I'll graduate 2 years early.
Smack that kid. Anyway.
Maybe I'll graduate 2 years early.
And he goes, huh. And he stands up, and he goes up to this whiteboard in his office. I'm 13 at this point, so if I'm going to graduate 2 years early, I'm going to graduate at 16, right? So I've got 3 years to complete all the stuff that I need to complete, fulfill all the credits, and graduate. So he literally, I'm not joking, stands up for like 10 minutes, doesn't even look at me, and just sketches out. He's erasing stuff, thinking about it, and he creates a three, you know, one column for year one column for year two, one column for year three. He creates a three-year plan, and the whole thing, all that I would have to do, and he turns around and he goes, what do you think? And to this day, I have no clue why I said this. I went, okay. And I went to work. I spent the rest of that summer working. I worked my tail off, and I graduated 2 years early. Now, I will say I jumped through the hoops. I don't think I really, what we're going to talk about tomorrow morning, I don't think I really learned how to think, but I did learn how to work hard. Okay? And work hard mentally, right? To pass the test, to do the things that I needed to do. I learned how to work hard. Okay? And then I graduated 2 years early. I got purpose. Okay? And it began there. Then this school that was like inspire, not require, you can go at your own pace, you can go as quickly as you want or slow as you want, you learn if you want to learn. Then the autonomy worked. But it didn't work for a whole year. Right? That was the key. That was the difference. I needed purpose. Then the autonomy worked. And then, because there was many times I wanted to give up, but as I saw myself progressing, passing a test, completing this assignment, completing that assignment, completing another test, and so on, right? I started to gain mastery. And that's the third component. Right? Name something you're good at. Anyone. Don't be embarrassed to say. What are you good at? Teaching.
Sleeping,
okay.
Piano,
okay. Right? Why do you enjoy doing it now, piano? Because you can play what you want. Because you're good at it, right? There's no motivator like something that we're already good at or that we're progressing in, right? You get that bug and you keep going, getting better, right? That's fun, okay? So mastery is the third one. Purpose, autonomy, and then mastery. Okay. So, back to the parents that have teens that are struggling with their own motivation. It starts with what? Purpose. And I'm going to give you some hard truth. It cannot be your purpose. Yeah, so let's talk about that, okay? You, and I don't know your particular situation, I haven't been in your moment, you know, I haven't listened to your conversations. But, for some reason, your child is thinking, they don't know because they have to fulfill everyone else's purpose. Right? They feel like, I have to do, and let's be real, in our society, and maybe less so with us as homeschoolers, but we still do it. Okay? In our society, we create kindergarten, first grade, second grade. We create all of these milestones. We create this entire path. We say you have to do these things. At 12, this happens. At 14, this happens. At 16, this happens. At 18, this happens. We decide their lives for them. Who here loves to be micromanaged? Think about that for a second. Think about the last time you were really micromanaged by someone else. Did you feel motivated? You hate it, right? Imagine how a teen feels. Their entire life is planned. And let's be real for a second. They don't know what the heck they're doing. So of course we feel compelled to plan it for them. Of course we create all these milestones. Of course we create all these institutions that create this for them. We belong to institutions. We become a part of it, part of our family culture. But the institutions decide their life for them, and they do not feel purpose. If you have a child, especially an older child, teens, okay, that lacks motivation, it's because of this. And I'm going to come over here to the four-year-old, okay? Do you hear what I'm saying? They have to make their own choices. Okay? They have to make their own choices. And guess what? If you have a teenager, they will change their mind. Okay? In my household, this is what I do with my son. We have what's called a BHAG. Big, hairy, audacious goals. Okay? And my son has a long-term BHAG and a short-term BHAG. Okay, the short term is 1 to 2 years, so it's big enough to be motivating for the now, and a long term one. Okay, recently he changed his BHAG. He wanted to go into the Air Force for a really long time, and he wanted to join the Air Force Academy, which is top 12 schools in the country in terms of difficulty level to get into. He had that as BHAG, but he also doesn't like certain things about our political environment right now. He's not sure he wants to be in the military. So he's changed his BHAG, and he's like, Dad, actually, I want to be a physician, and here's the things that I want to do. Guess what? I don't care what his BHAG is. I care that he has one. I don't care what it is. Because when I was 14, a year after I decided to, or had that experience that I was sharing with you earlier, I wanted to go into the CIA. But then by the time I was 18, I fell in love with education. You know, it's okay that it changes, okay? It's that they have it. His short term is that he wants to go to nationals in Taekwondo. So he's really motivated, especially physically, right? I didn't tell him. In fact, I tell him up front, I don't care what it is, I care that you have one. And we talk about these exact principles, purpose, autonomy, and mastery, okay? I say, what's your purpose? That's your BHAG. Okay, I'm going to give you all the autonomy that you need and want, okay, to be able to go get it, but I'm here to help. Okay, he comes to me and goes, Dad, I need accountability on my workouts. So I work out every day. Okay, we'll do that together now, right? But I don't tell him, you have to work out now. Okay, and if he says, I'm not going to do it today, I go, okay, it's your BHAG. That's what I tell him every time. And he goes, okay, I'll do it. You know what I mean? And he goes to work, right? Because he believes in that purpose. Okay, now let's talk about four-year-olds and seven-year-olds. They aren't going to be thinking super big picture. Sometimes you'll get a unique kid that will, right? They're like, I want to be this. And it'll change week to week. That's fine too, okay? But also give short-term purpose. What do you want to accomplish today? What do you want to learn today? What feat do you want to conquer? Right? Get them dreaming and thinking about their purpose. And then all your job is to support them on fulfilling that. Not to get them to do stuff, but to support them on fulfilling their purpose. And what's cool when you have littles is you get into a cycle of that over and over and over. And they start to believe, I can do whatever I want. I have purpose. What I'm going to do? I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Then they go and do it. Right? It's powerful. So we think, as parents, we have to be the motivators. No. Okay? There's a fantastic book called The Carpenter versus the Gardener. We are not carpenters as parents. Shaping a kid into a cabinet or into, you know, whatever you want to build. They're not ours to build. They're ours to cultivate. Who here has ever gotten a tree to grow? Have you? Have you built it? Have you created it? Did you place it? No. You cultivated it. You chose to have it. You chose to plant it. Right? Sometimes we choose not to have it, but we get them anyway. right? But we cultivate. We don't shoot. We don't create it. We cultivate, we create the environment in which it grows. And this is the environment for people. Purpose, autonomy, and then mastery. That's the way that you cultivate. That's the way you grow them into who they want to be and who they're becoming.
Typically, where is that line between little kids and teens, like a 10-year-old?
Great. Yeah. There is no line, okay? It's a sliding scale of how long term. Does that make sense? Like, even for my son right now, who says he wants to be a physician, but was saying that he wanted to go into the Air Force, and it changed, it's going to keep changing, right? But the short-term one of wanting to go to nationals in Taekwondo, right, that's a one-and-a-half-year goal, right? That, so I always do kind of two. I have a bigger picture one that's going to build the life that he wants, right? And again, that'll change. And a shorter-term one that actually gives a lot of day-to-day motivation, at least for certain areas in his life. And P.S., I didn't get into this, but I break it down into four parts, actually. Okay? And I do long-term and short-term for each of these four areas. Mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical. Okay? We set long-term and short-term for, and that's it. And all I'm doing, sometimes you go, I don't know what I want to do spiritually. Okay. I'm not going to force it on him. I'm not going to tell him what it should be. Do you want to brainstorm that with me or not? Yeah, let's brainstorm. Cool. Or, no, I'm not really feeling compelled spiritually right now. Okay. You know, that's, in other words, if you're there to say you have to have, you know, I'm just providing some structure, right, some information, right, for him to start realizing who he is and for him to gain that power and motivation. So again, motivation is a choice. It's not something that happens to you. These are the choices. I'm just presenting the choices. And teaching him literally the science behind it so that he can understand it and make his own choices. You'll get sometimes, okay? You'll get a jaded teen. But if you spend enough time with them, they'll all tell you they want a great life. They'll tell you they want certain things. Sometimes it's just material things. I would like to have a beautiful home. Or I'd like to have, you know, whatever, I'd like to travel a lot, or whatever it is. Again, we shouldn't care, because it's their life. What we care about is them actually having the motivation to get it, okay? To go discover that life, to go create it. And they'll create such a beautiful life. They'll create such a beautiful life, better than you could ever create for them. Because you can't do it for them. You can't live it for them. Okay. All right. Oh, I got 3 minutes. Let's see here. Okay, let me share this last thing with you. I might go over 2 minutes, but we're going to go super fast, okay? Now, back to little, but also teens and so forth, okay? Here's one more thing, especially as educators, okay? Now, like at my company, we start to say, hey, we specifically designed my company to start helping parents right when your kids become teens, to start to take over and be the educator with you as the CEO, right? You're delegating to us a lot of that education. Why? Because I had an experience, and many of my colleagues had the same experience. When you get into those teen years, you start to need others, right, to weigh yourself against, especially experts, right? You need someone who's a great chemist to see how you are with your chemistry and so on. Does that make sense? So we specifically designed that. And however you want to do your own education, what I recommend is that you create an environment where they start, where you're helping them cultivate into who they are, but you're no longer educating them. Because if you do it too long and they become dependent on you, they're going to live in your basement when they're 35. And I'm not joking. Okay? You don't want that, right? What you want them is to be well-adjusted, motivated human beings. Start getting them to experience other people. Now, I'm not saying, therefore, we'll take them down to the local public school. I'm not totally against that idea, but I'm just saying that's not necessarily the solution. It's not one or the other. But find ways for them to get more mentors, get more experience with other people. See how they measure up against their peers. They need that. Okay? And what I love about homeschoolers is communities like this, where we come together in co-ops, where we come together in groups, we collaborate, and we motivate each other, okay? That's key, especially for your team. All right, so let me just show you this really fast. Okay, so we do need to teach our kids how to do basic things, right? We do need to teach them how to clean the dishes and so on, okay? One of the best things that you can do when you're teaching is rate your child on a scale of 0 to 2 on both commitment and skill, okay? And this is what I call situational leadership with my son. Instead of saying, hey, I'm going to teach you this, and then I micromanage him and make him learn it, and then he's not motivated and we fight. Who's had that experience? And you fight the whole time and you're frustrated, okay? What we do is we start with a situational leadership conversation, okay? And I say, okay, how big a desire do you have to do this thing? What's your commitment level? 0, 1, or 2, right? Make it really simple, okay? And a 0, 1, or 2 on his skill level. So when it comes to his math, he's already decent, pretty good at math. He can learn, and he's fairly autodidactic, but he's not super strong. So he's rated himself as a 1 on his math skill, okay? But on his motivation, it fluctuates, you know, semester to semester, but it's usually around a 1 or a 2, okay? So he rates himself. Okay, let me jump in here. So sometimes there is 0, and then you have to have a conversation about why that thing is so necessary, okay? And find a way for him to have some level of commitment. But for any time your child, let me go back. Oh, I skipped a slide. Anyway. No, I didn't. Never mind. Okay. So anytime that your child is a 1, meaning they're either a 1 on commitment or a 1 on skill, you need to give them actual step-by-step directions. This is exactly how you do this. Okay? But you have this conversation first where they're bought into, yeah, I'm a 1. I actually need your micromanagement. I need your step-by-step instructions. Mom, I need to make cookies for my friends for this thing this weekend. Never made cookies before. What do I do, right? But you need to, because then you'll fight the whole time, even though you're helping them do the thing that they asked you to do. So you have a conversation first. Where are you at with making cookies? I want to do this. I'm not very good at it. Whatever, right? I'm a 1. So you give them step-by-step directions, but they buy into that up front. Okay, next one. It could be a 2. That means they're a 1 and a 1, right? Or a 2 on commitment and a 0 on skill, or a 2 on skill and a 0 on commitment, right? This is where you don't give them step-by-step directions, you give them some coaching, okay? Hey, you can figure this out, but let me coach you along the way on technique, on how to do it a little bit better. Let's have you do it once through on your own, and then I'll coach you afterward on the result. Does that make sense? Okay? So this, next one, 3s. This is where they're at least a 1 on one level and a 2 on the other. They need more autonomy now, right? This is where you recognize where they're at. Hey, Mom, I have a purpose. I want to, again, bake cookies or whatever it might be, okay? Whatever the thing is that they need to learn. Hey, they're actually already pretty good at baking. They've just maybe not baked that type of cookie before. So then it's maybe a little bit of mentoring. Well, hey, I'll lead you to it. Go for it. Let me know if you need some help. You know, and then you can have a conversation about it later and so on. Cookies is maybe too small of an example, but with larger things, with how they're finding their week, with how they're, does that make sense? And you can start to mentor them in these areas. And then lastly, when they're a 4, 2 and a 2, right? They are a 2 on commitment and a 2 on skill. And this is where parents get the heck out of their way, right? Like, if I came up to you and I said, you're such a good walker, good job walking, like, that's condescending, right? Like, that would be really lame for someone to say that because you've been walking for years, right? Like, if they're already really good at that thing, just let them do it. Don't get involved. Don't critique it. Even if there are better ways to do it, let them go. Let them have the autonomy. So often, it's hard for us as parents, including me, and I know this stuff and I teach this stuff, to let go. To not want to, oh, you can do this a little bit better. Let them come to you, especially when they're a 4. And even when they're a 3, when you're mentoring, what do you want to learn from me? What do you need to know from me? But coaching, it's like, no, we pre-decided, I'm going to coach you on your technique. Or, hey, you're a 1, you've got no skill or ability here, you've got really little commitment or none. Okay, I'm going to give you step-by-step directions and show you exactly how to do this. You pre-plan the amount of autonomy that they need, and you'll get rid of most, not all, but most of those lights. Yeah, the thing for 0 is, let me go back to it, don't have them do it. If you're like, I need you to do this, and they're a 0, they have 0 commitment and 0 skill to do it, it's going to be a disaster, don't have them do it. Okay? Yeah, great question. So they're just going to be a 0 all the time to get out of everything. Okay, then they get the consequences of that. What are the consequences of that? Right? What is the result of them not contributing to your household? That's where rewards and punishments come in. Okay, now I didn't take enough time to come back to rewards and punishments, but where do rewards and punishments come in? You try to align your rewards and punishments as much as possible with the natural consequences of not doing that thing, or of doing that thing. Does that make sense? So, when my son doesn't do his chores, which every morning is dishes, okay, where do the dishes end up? I take them to his room. There they are. Okay? You know, this is your thing, right? But we create natural consequences. We nudge him a little bit, but we create natural consequences for his commitments. Does that make sense? That's where rewards and punishments. It's at the zero. But oftentimes, if it's just like, hey, Dad, I really don't want to do this thing. I don't care about this thing. My Taekwondo studio asked me to do it. Don't do it. Now you'll have the consequences of that. The Taekwondo studio won't call on you for help for these things, and therefore you don't get those benefits of building that relationship. Oh, yeah. I guess it would be disappointing to them. Maybe I do have a little bit of desire to do it. All right, well, let's rate you. Where are you at? Probably like a 1 on skill and a 0 on commitments. All right, let me give you step-by-step directions on doing exactly that thing. Does that make sense? More often than not, when they say they're a 0, they're really not. They just aren't old enough to understand the consequences of a 0. But sometimes, there's minimum levels for participation in my home, and if you're not doing it, there are consequences. That's where rewards and punishments come in. Okay, I'm way over time, I'm sorry. Thank you so much, everyone, for coming.